Well, while South Africans were focusing on the Madlanga Commission, the Parliamentary Ad Hoc Committee showing crazy things happening in the police department, politics, crime bosses, in the United States, there were some big things happening as well, as far as our country is concerned. L. Brent Bozell III has made his appearance before Congress, before the Senate, and we will be talking in a moment to Josh Maservi, who's with the Hudson Institute. Josh focuses on Africa, African geopolitics, and counterterrorism, and he'll be giving us some insights on that and some other issues that are of interest at the moment. Josh, as always, it's really good to catch up with you. Did you get a chance to watch, maybe before we start there, L. Brent Bozell III. We don't get names like that in South Africa. Tell us a bit more.
Yeah, there aren't too many names like that in the United States, even with the broad variety of names that we have. It's interesting. I don't know what his heritage is, but it's a bit of a unique name.
And he's a Texan, is he?
I believe so. Yeah, I don't know for sure, but he's a longtime conservative media hand, let's say. So he's been in that industry for decades. That's really his background. So he a bit of a different, maybe unorthodox in some ways of a background for even a political ambassador. But that's his background.
It's a heck of a business that he's created, the Media Research Center. I was just having a look at it. It's been going since 1987. 500,000 members, 12 million Facebook friends or fans, 500 million impressions every week. He's got a big business there. You wonder why he would give that up to come and spend a bit of time in little old South Africa I don't know how many friends he's going to have, but he certainly is going to have a few more critics.
Yeah. I don't know either. I don't know him. So I'm not sure if he has, a personal interest, a pre-existing personal interest in South Africa. I assume he does. And South Africa is a beautiful country. It's lovely to visit. I always enjoy visiting, but yeah, it looks like it could be a really hard tenure for an American ambassador, given the difficult situation that exists between the two countries. So it may not be particularly relaxing. We'll see. I'm sure he has his very good reasons for wanting this post, and I'm hopeful that he can be an effective ambassador for the United States. He certainly... we were just talking about his professional background. He certainly does not shy away from hard conversations and even confrontation, which from the American perspective might really be necessary, depending on how this relationship continues on.
It's a great governance process that you have in the U.S. I know that many people think that Donald Trump should be doing more behind closed doors, but as far as the public is concerned, it's refreshing to see negotiations, if you like, being in public. And certainly the process that Brent Bozell had to go through before he got the thumbs up to be the ambassador, or I don't even know if he has got it yet, but he had to go to Senate. And the Democratic senator from Maryland certainly gave him a rough ride. They didn't hold back on their punches. Is that the way American politics just rolls?
Very frequently, yeah. now, of course, there is South Africa is a bit of a political contentious issue in Washington, D.C. Not nearly as much as some other issues, but there is some politics attached to it. That's not always true. So in fact, it's somewhat rare, I would say, for an American ambassador to an African country to face sort of stiff questioning, let's say. Because generally they are not particularly controversial posts that they're being sent to, or there are not political issues attached to the country in question. So South Africa would be an exception here. Normally they're quite these types of affairs, if it's to a non-controversial country, which generally, or a non if it's to a country where there are not political issues attached, usually it's a fairly friendly affair. Even they might even do it en bloc, what's called en bloc. So they'll confirm a whole group of ambassadors or other appointees at the same time. So there's some appointees might not even get questions. Bazelle did, as you referenced, and I think that's a result of the prominence that South Africa has in DC in certain circles, mostly because of President Trump's public remarks, as you referenced. But I agree, it is a good system. They have to face the music. These appointees and even elected officials get called before Congress frequently and face a very, very vigorous questioning at times. These types of hearings can be hugely entertaining because of the exchanges that go on. And I do think that's a valuable part of the American system.
Cody from Paul has sold multiple vehicles to We Buy Cars. Suspicious?
I think so.
Is that a crime?
No. Where are you getting the cars?
I buy them and I sell them at the spot like a normal person.
Okay.
No, man, I'm just an accounting student. I know a good deal when I see one.
That's Excel, meant.
What's more stressful, tax season or selling a car at We Buy Cars?
Tax season, obviously.
We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
So what happens next? When will the U.S. have an ambassador in South Africa?
So I don't know if an official date has been set. Generally, once confirmation happens, the process does move fairly quickly. So I was in D.C. yesterday and ran into ambassadorial appointee who had just been confirmed, and he is leaving today. So his timeline was, I think, a week and a half or something from the time of confirmation to deployment, let's say. I think that's somewhat typical, but there's a lot of different variables that can intervene, including whether the ambassador has to wrap up personal affairs or so I think the timeline can shift around a little bit, but it is generally, I think the feeling is they want them to get out there as quickly as possible once they're confirmed. That's their job, to be out there. So
what can South Africa expect from the new US ambassador?
I think he will very faithfully communicate the US government's priorities to the South Africans. I think I assume that he will, I feel quite confident actually, that he will be there with an interest to improve the relationship if possible, but that does not mean a bunch of concessions from the Americans to the South African government. The pretty strongly held view in Washington within the current administration is that South Africa has to make concessions, substantive concessions, before the relationship can improve. That is the goal for the relationship to get better, because I think everybody wants it to be, and nobody believes that it serves either country's interests to have a really rancorous relationship. But there's also this sense that unless the South African government is willing to take some substantive measures, the relationship cannot improve. It's not in the U.S. national interest to allow the status quo to continue on as it has been for years, really. So I think he will press for those types of reforms and decisions from the South African government. It'll be really interesting to see, what sort of level of access he gets within Pretoria. That'll be something interesting to watch. I assume he'll be received at high levels, but I don't know for sure. I think it's positive that there's will be an American ambassador on the ground to speak very clearly and communicate quickly, hopefully, to the South African government, and maybe cut through some of the confusion that South African government claims to have over American desires and for the relationship and what we want to see, the types of actions the U.S. wants to see from the South African government to improve the relationship. But there's a lot of unknowns here, and we're in a bit of a wait and see game.
I guess those unknowns just became a little bit more complicated for South Africa after what Donald Trump and President Key have managed to put together in South Korea. It is normalizing the relationship between the US and China. And China, of course, being a friend of South Africa's, and yet South Africa's relationship with the US is not by any means mended yet, although Cyril Ramaphosa, our president, is today, we have a piece on BizNews today where he's talking about he expects that there will be some kind of finalization on the trade deal soon. Is what happened in China possibly going to allow something quicker for South Africa, or are those substantive rules that you talk about, or the substantive changes, just so important that it doesn't matter what Pretoria says at the moment, they aren't going to be able to get any breaks from Washington?
Yeah, I don't think what happened between President Trump and, President Xi will affect the negotiations around between the U.S. and South Africa. The issues are quite separate. Obviously, South Africa's relationship with China is one of those things that frustrates the United States, but it's not one of the core problems. Iran, much more of a core problem. Even Russia, you could argue, is more of a problem for the United States. And then, of course, the non-tariff trade barriers like BEE or even EWC that's potentially threatened American investments in the country. Those are the real sticking points. And again, the farm murders and et cetera. So I think the China issues are a bit ancillary to the main event, let's say, between the US and South Africa. So I don't expect that what is going on currently, it just happened between President Trump and President Xi, will much affect the U.S.-South Africa relationship. The other thing about the President Xi-President Trump meeting, and President Trump has said it went terrifically well, et cetera, and we've already seen, Chinese companies starting to buy American soybeans, for instance, which was one of those sort of tit for tat measures that had been put in place. We still don't know exactly where the U.S.-China relationship is going. We don't have any substantive or comprehensive, let me say, details about the arrangements. I'm sure there'll have to be a lot of follow on work, and it could fall apart pretty quickly because there's also in DC, there's a very strong hawkish community on China that really sees China as the premier competitor to the United States. It sees it as an adversary that is constantly, when you think about just cyber attacks, for instance, China constantly attacks the United States through all sorts of nefarious cyber methods, and they've stolen immense amounts of personal data on Americans. I'm sure they have mine, not because I'm important, but because they have essentially everybody's in the United States. They do that constantly, and then there are other activities that are almost equally provocative. So this is the type of challenge the United States is dealing with, and there's a very large, as I say, segment of China hawks in Washington, D.C. that will be wary of something that looks like a real attempted rapprochement between the U.S. and China. Now, again, who knows how that plays out politically? I have no idea. But, I think that there's still a strong current in Washington that will resist a real, strong thaw between the U.S. and China because of this sense that I think is very well founded. In fact, this proven this phenomenon of just almost constant Chinese attacks in various ways against the United States.
Moving back to the Southern African region, there was a lot of excitement over the weekend when Mozambique announced that the Total Energy gas plant, the 20 billion rand project there, was going to now continue. The force majeure was out the way. They dealt with the Islamist militarists and all was looking well. And then this morning, ExxonMobil, who just around the corner from Total, with an even bigger project there, a $30 billion project. And just for those who haven't been following it, these two projects will double the size of the economy in Mozambique. So they are hugely important to the Mozambican economy. This morning, they canceled the press conference, the Financial Times reported that they canceled the press conference yesterday, and that now they aren't going ahead or have not pressed the button to go back to building that project once more, because the feedback that they're getting is that there are people being murdered and the Islamist militarists are stepping up their efforts there. This is something that would fall very squarely in your geopolitical, African geopolitical basket. What do we make of all of this? And is there any light at the end of this very dark tunnel?
Yeah, right. So as you noted, Total lifted force majeure, so they're now actually obligated to move ahead with the development of their project on this massive natural gas field in northern Mozambique. It is still unstable. It's hard to say any otherwise. The Rwandan force that is in northern Mozambique has been effective at securing some of the parts of Cabo Delgado that they're in, but they're not everywhere, obviously, in the north. And other forces have not been nearly as effective as the Rwandans. This group, which is known by various names, even including sometimes Al-Shabaab, even though it's distinct from the group in Somalia, it shows no sign of going away. This will be, a group that remains a problem for many years, likely. If you look at the terrorism issue in that region, but even all across Africa and even beyond in the Middle East, et cetera, it's really rare to actually wipe out a terrorist group. Even you can damage them, you can suppress them, you can push them back. But we have groups now that have been active for well over a decade, unfortunately. Now, sometimes they'll rebrand, they might merge with another group, for instance, but they don't, again, very few instances of, at least in our current context, of terrorist groups just disappearing. We can think about the ADF, another Islamist group that operates nearby in eastern DRC, and at one point was even linked with the group in northern Mozambique. They've been operating for 15 years or something like that, and they don't get much attention, but they're extremely brutal. They will, and they've killed tens of thousands of people at this point. So these groups just they linger on. Because there is an enabling environment around them that allows them to recruit quite easily in some cases. So in Mozambique's case, this is it's a badly mismanaged country in many ways, or has been traditionally. Now maybe it's improving, but the people in the north feel very disenfranchised from the government that is in the south. That is traditionally a political opposition stronghold, and they have been treated accordingly by the powers that be, the political powers that be, in Maputo. So I think that enabling environment remains, and then you do have this Salafi conception of Islam that has become very widespread across Africa. Traditionally, Africa is Sufi. That was like the ancient sort of practice of Islam in Africa, but that's been displaced in some areas, places like Somalia, where they're almost all Salafi now, because of this sort of global Salafi movement that was funded by the likes of Saudi Arabia, especially, but also some of the other Gulf states. Now you have, and I'm not at all suggesting that all Salafis are terrorists. That's not what I'm saying, but all Islamist terrorists are Salafis. That's the distinction. So with the exception of the Shia groups. Let me be clear. This is a long-term challenge. There are no easy or quick solutions. So I think this group will remain a problem in northern Mozambique, and it's going to be difficult for these oil companies and these other hydrocarbon companies to operate unless they have probably an army like Rwanda that's just providing constant security.
I'm sure they didn't work that into their budgets when they did the project initially, and it has been so postponed. Should have been on stream in 2018. The Total project still waiting. So Total has to do it. They have to go ahead. What about Exxon? They haven't, they were supposed to also pull the trigger and didn't. So would they sit on the fence for a while now?
Yeah, I don't know exactly what their reasoning is. I suspect that they are probably looking for further security guarantees or some sort of security development that can give them a little more confidence in their ability to develop their share of this field without facing attacks from this very nasty Islamist group. It's somewhat capable, unfortunately. So. That I would suspect that is the issue. Although I don't know all the details. It's possible they're in a political argument with the government. Maybe there's a disagreement on a contract or a regulatory disagreement. That happens all the time as well. So I guess we'll have to wait for a few more details about Exxon's reasoning on this. But yeah, it's an immense gas field. It could be an extraordinary resource. For Mozambique, of course, but also for the world energy situation. So you don't just walk away from that type of resource easily. So I think Exxon I'm just purely speculating here because I truly do not know their reasoning, but I suspect that they would want to still have their stake. I doubt they would want to surrender that. But they clearly are not totally comfortable for whatever reason. I suspect it's a security situation, but maybe there's other reasons. They're not totally comfortable in proceeding right now.
Of course, it has many implications for South Africa, not just the 10 to 12,000 people from this country who will be working on those projects, but if Mozambique is continuing as a poverty hub, then there will be continued illegal immigrants coming into South Africa, and you can't be an island of prosperity or relative prosperity when your neighbors are struggling, because they're just going to swamp you eventually. So there's a lot at stake here. Should South Africa not also be playing a bigger role?
Well, I'm not sure what role South Africa could play. Militarily, South Africa has really struggled to field effective forces recently. We saw this in Eastern DRC. They lost men up there. And they were really, they probably could have gotten wiped out if the rebels up there, the M23, who are backed by Rwanda, decided to do so. That was how dire the situation was. If I remember correctly, there was a South African component of the SADC force that went to northern Mozambique and tried to fight this group, but they haven't been very effective. Again, it's really been the Rwandans. Even their mercenaries have been fighting. So the sort of the infamous Russian mercenary outfit Wagner fought against this group up in the north and lost men and pulled out. Wagner eventually wanted no part of this. So I'm not sure what South Africa can do other than lending its good diplomatic offices if there was an opportunity there. But again, how do you negotiate with a totalitarian Islamist movement, which is what these things are. So very, very difficult. But I agree, it is I think your analysis is exactly correct. This is a huge problem for South Africa because of, the jobs issue that you mentioned and the illegal immigration. It's not just Mozambicans coming down. Mozambique is a major route for illegal immigration from other parts of the continent into South Africa. So until Mozambique stabilizes and hopefully achieves some prosperity, it's going to remain a challenge for South Africa, which is tragic. Mozambique is another one of those really beautiful countries. When I, you know, I've only been there once, but we're in the south and there's a lot of South Africans in the southern part of Mozambique, day tripping or even spending the weekends and enjoying the weather and the beaches and the food and everything else. So hopefully Mozambique can stabilize. It will start with better governance. That is the key. If they cannot better manage this country. And interestingly, President Chapo is in D.C. now. He's there for talks. So the U.S. is engaging. It'll be interesting to learn whether the president spoke with ExxonMobil while he's here. I expect he will. I believe he's going to Houston. So I'm sure maybe he already spoke with Exxon. I'm not. And maybe that did not calm Exxon. So we'll have to wait to see some more of these details come out before we can have a better sense of what's happening.
President Daniel Chapo, he's the new president, was elected in January, and many Mozambicans are hoping that this will be a new dawn. But so far, not that easy. Josh Maservi is a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.